they doing, to what extent they think the white paper, although I know they've been part of that process, obviously as the minister is part of cabinet, but to see where there may be shortcomings and so on. So we have that further advantage that we have a group of people there with talents and may be able to share with some of those views with us. So that's really the idea here. It's not really to sit and interrogate what the NPC is doing. It's actually more to see how the white paper is fitting into what they're doing. So thank you very much for making it. And I know there's been a lot of toing and froing, but thank God you're here. And let's hear what you have to say.
I hope you've all got an input.
A little one that looks like this with red on it. As any good communist should always have, red on the front page. Ms. Issop.
Thank you, Chairperson, and members of the Portfolio Committee.
Another recommendation.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to be here. In fact, even if it was a bit of a misunderstanding originally about timing. Chairperson, I understand, as you've just outlined, that the brief was to look at what the National Planning Commission's views are on the white paper or how we've engaged with it. And with specific reference, I'm assuming, to the work we're doing on transitioning to a low-carbon economy. So I'd like to start off by saying that, in fact, what I'll be presenting here today is not the view of the National Planning Commission in relation to the white paper, because we have not officially engaged with it as the National Planning Commission. And it would be a bit remiss of me to be making comments on the white paper as an individual commissioner in that regard. So I hope that that is understood. We haven't formally taken a position on it as the Planning Commission. So what I'd like to do, essentially, is to brief the committee about the approach we've adopted as the National Planning Commission.
That's more important for me. I mean,
okay, correct. So if that is fine, then we can start off with that. So essentially what I'd like to do in this presentation to the Portfolio Committee is to look at the ongoing work that we've done in terms of the overall development of the vision statement and the development plan, but specifically in relation to the work that we've been doing in terms of transitioning to a low-carbon economy. And as you will note in very red print, is that I can't also get into the details of this, necessarily the content of it, because we are still in the process of finalizing that. And in fact, Chairperson, members of the committee, we'll be meeting this Friday. So the timing of this committee, and we can always come back, is a bit premature in terms of actually getting into the very detailed content of that plan, because we still have to discuss it as a commission. So I will, to a large extent, deal with the process matters and then give some high-level content ideas that has already come through this. I hope that that is okay with the Portfolio Committee.
Absolutely fine. No, I really wanted just to hear, you know, what work you guys are doing so that one can see and make up our own mind to what extent this is on the right track and we're all singing from the same end. And then, as you say, when those things are finalized, we can look at things a bit more carefully. So that's absolutely fine.
Thank you, Jeff. So I am aware that there has been previous presentations to the committee by the National Planning Commission. So I'm sure that you are familiar with these timelines. In our view as commissioners, we thought that these timelines were really, really tight. Essentially to deliver a plan and a vision for 2030 by 11 November this year after an appointment of March and last year was really ambitious. But we tried to fulfill our mandate, and essentially we are going to be still launching the plan. And we're calling it a draft development plan and vision statement by 11 November this year. What we are envisaging, though, and this is specifically important for this piece of work on the transition to a low-carbon economy, is that further detailed work will continue after the plan has been released as well. And we're hoping that the plan will stimulate massive commentary and input, and we will have consultations around it, and that would also further help with that detailed work that happens beyond 11th November. You might be familiar with this as well. But I thought that one of the initial elements of this vision that we have been looking at, these are just initial elements of a vision, proposed vision, is the vision around natural wealth being harnessed sustainably, protecting our environment, and of course using science and modern technology to ensure growing economies that benefits all. A very high level, this is the element of a vision that we would locate our work on, the on climate change and on transitioning to a low carbon economy. So it's located within that particular element. You would too have, I hope, recognized this particular slide, but in the diagnostic document that we produced and published in June, we had identified 9 critical elements, challenges, and 2 strategic objectives as the National Planning Commission. And of course, those 2 strategic objectives would be eliminating poverty and reducing inequality, and then those challenges that we were identifying that impact on achieving those strategic objectives. And the element that I'm drawing out, although it is absolutely connected to, you can connect the work we're doing on climate change and transitioning to a low carbon economy to almost every single challenge that have been identified, because it is a cross-cutting issue, but specifically we're focusing on the resource-intensive nature of our economy and our society. So it's located within that challenge. So where we've moved from the diagnostic document is to look at how we would turn the challenges that we've identified into plans. And we've gone through some initial thinking about it, but I want to draw the attention of the committee to the one challenge of resource intensive nature of our economy. What we're saying is we need to promote sustainable resource use. And I've highlighted that in red. Essentially, therefore, the work that we would be looking at in terms of turning that challenge into a plan would be to look at transitioning to a lower carbon economy, looking at, of course, that work in relation to the complementarities with job creation and growth, that we would look at focusing and shifting our focus towards water resource management, looking at pricing externalities, and also, of course, then looking at ways of cushioning the poor and recognizing that we will not be doing this as South Africa in isolation. Climate change is a global phenomenon, but also very importantly, we need to build our relationships with our region, and so the regional context becomes important. So essentially, at a very high level, the work that we've been doing on the transition to a low-carbon economy is located within the challenge and the way we see this being transformed into a plan. The overall, there's been sort of a general overall paradigm that guided our work as the National Planning Commission. In terms of the work that I'll be talking about, this particular work stream, the important thing is for all of the work that was done, but specifically also for this, that we needed to look at pragmatic solutions to the problems that we've identified, and that these solutions have to be evidence-based. So a lot of hard work has gone into research, expert engagement, also not reinventing the wheel, because there's been absolutely massive amounts of work already been done, not only by non-government sectors but an institution, but also by government itself in this particular area of work. And again, the white paper process helped contribute to the kind of evidence base that we try to build this from. And then secondly, we're also looking at how global, very importantly, historical trends will inform our plan as well, and specifically the global trends in relation to climate change. Climate change then gets pulled out in the diagnostic documents, not only as part of the challenges that we identified, you know, that being of the resource-intensive nature of our economy, but we also identified climate change as a driver of change into the future, looking at the global trends in relation to that. And that we know from all of the work being done around this, the second national communications plan that was driven by the Department of Water and Environmental Affairs, we've already seen what the science has been saying in terms of the vulnerabilities and the impact on South Africa. And so we've used that as the basis also to look at the impacts, our vulnerabilities, and how we would need to respond in the future. So, I'd like to move on to therefore that was the context in which the work is happening for all of the work streams, but also very importantly I tried to highlight how it links to the work that we've been driving around climate change and low carbon economy. And essentially, yeah, I'd like to just talk a little bit about the process. We've had an extensive stakeholder engagement process in this particular work stream on transitioning to a low carbon economy. And when we refer to stakeholders, the very high level with government, labor, civil society, and business specifically. And then very, in a far more concentrated way, we then also had very specific engagements with the minerals and energy sector at a high level, because we believe that sector specifically needed to be targeted. Essentially, we're dealing with the resource-intensive nature of the minerals and energy sector in our country. So we've had those engagements. We've had a round of expert engagements. We've looked at existing government policies. So, for example, this is where, and it wasn't at the white paper phase necessarily at the point we started looking at it, but green paper, and then moving on to the white paper, we've looked at the climate change response strategy. We've looked at the draft carbon tax proposal by Treasury. We've looked at the IRP 2010 and a number of other policy initiatives by government. Now, we specifically commissioned research around this because one of the key things that we were concerned about when starting this work was the lack of alignment, the lack of coherence that we started picking up from the different policy initiatives by various government departments. Some of it contradicting each other, some of it not cohering, and of course we were concerned about the lack of coordination across government departments in this regard. So we've got a research paper that we can certainly make available to portfolio, to the portfolio committee chairs. It might be of interest, especially in the work that you're driving in this committee. And based on some of that kind of research and analysis, we did look at those areas where we found contradictions, and we would highlight that in our plan as well. So essentially, out of this process, what we've come out with as an outcome is a set of consensus areas. Clearly, there's massive areas of divergence among key stakeholders in the country. But what we needed to do very quickly was identify what are the areas of consensus and what are those areas of divergences. And we were really excited that we could emerge out of the stakeholder engagement process with consensus in some of the key underlying assumptions that will drive our planning process, the principles that need to guide our planning process, and then some very clear, concrete next steps for action by the Commission in the development of this vision and plan. So essentially what we are seeing, Chairperson and members of the committee, is that on this, in this area of work, what we will find is an initial proposal, a draft plan and vision, but certainly not the full plan. This work is far too complicated to have delivered in the time period that we had. And so we are taking a phased approach to this particular piece of work. We will be looking at this draft chapter, as I said, this Friday as the Commission, and then in the 11th November launch, you will find that there's obviously the kind of initial framing of the work that we're doing, but much more detailed work, and we identify what those elements of the work will be in the plan itself. Will have to happen post 11 November 2011. So, Chairperson, that was the process that we followed in terms of this particular work stream. We felt it was important to have a very inclusive process around it, especially with the stakeholders engaged or that will be affected by this and would obviously have to be involved in some of the thinking around this. It was important to bring them in very early on. And we're particularly pleased that that was a robust process and that we could emerge with some kind of key consensus areas. So just to deal with some high-level content issues, essentially what we will be talking about and is going to probably, this is still the subject of decision-making, so I am being very hopeful, that we are talking about a just transition to a low carbon economy, a low carbon and resilient economy and society. And we've particularly inserted the word just transition because we do want very clear recognition that there is a developmental context in which our transition needs to happen in South Africa. There's a historical context. Our economy has particular characteristics as it is right now in terms of its structure, but also the impact of this transition will be felt unevenly. And we do want to ensure that in the ways we deal with the transition, that those are going to probably be what we will think about as winners and losers, that the losers will not be the poor and the vulnerable. And so we've talked about a just transition. And Labour particularly was very strong on this matter because there is a big concern around the impact on jobs and job losses, etc., in such a transition. We speak about resilience because we deal very particularly with the adaptation implications of this transition and what we need to do. And I do want to indicate that we could have used climate resilience, and I do know that the white paper talks about climate resilience. We believe that we wanted to have a far more broader definition of resilience because it's not, you know, we do want to also build a resilient economy, resilient to the shocks of what is now called response measures that we could experience as an economy when others are taking measures to deal with climate change globally. And so in this context, as I said, we frame this transition within the context of our development challenges. And we do that by choice, and we do that very explicitly. And so for us, as we said in our diagnostics, the key challenge in our country, the two strategic objectives, is to address poverty and inequality. We believe that these are not necessarily, to transition to a low-carbon economy is not necessarily mutually exclusive from achieving these objectives, but we do believe that there will be difficult decisions to make in this transition, there will be difficult trade-offs, and when we do make those tough decisions, we have to always consider the development context in our country. We also focus, as I said, both on adaptation and mitigation. However, we've taken a far more detailed focus on the mitigation element of it, given that the specific challenge that we've identified is the resource intensity of our economy. So we already say up front now that we have taken a bit more of a detailed focus on the mitigation element. We believe that the white paper deals quite substantially with the adaptation and the resilience elements of this work. And certainly there needs to be far more work done in that regard. And what we do essentially, and this might be specifically different to the white paper, is that we take an explicit focus on the economic implications of such a transition. And that is a different emphasis to what we have right now in the white paper itself. We believe, given this context in which we are right now, that what we have to achieve is a managed transition. So in other words, do not set ourselves unrealistic ambitions that we're not able to deliver on, and make sure that we do manage this transition, and hence long-term planning is critical so that we can plan for it in a pragmatic and reasonable way so that we do not have unintended consequences and implications that we can't deal with as a country. And very importantly, and I believe the white paper doesn't explicitly do this, we believe that the role of the Planning Commission is to very sharply identify those trade-offs. We can set ourselves ambitions, we can say this is what we need to do. The implications, however, of all of these ambitions that we set ourselves for our economy and our society does involve difficult decision-making. And if you don't sharply identify that upfront, alert governments and society more broadly to this, those decisions, being made in a transparent way and identified clearly upfront, as I said, it will be difficult to make them. So we have to identify those difficult trade-offs. And also, importantly, given that we're dealing with long-term planning to 2030, but there are decisions being made now, whether they're policy decisions, whether they're infrastructure investment decisions, there are potential lock-ins that will have an impact on what we're trying to achieve by 2030, and so we will also be identifying some initial potential locking in this document. And as I said, we will look at the detailed planning process after the November draft, but this is the initial first phase that we're delivering for 11-11-2011. So in conclusion, Chairperson, essentially, the work that we've developed as the Planning Commission, as I said, we're still finalizing that. We have a tight deadline, but this Friday we will be going through a whole lot of chapters, and the just transition to a low-carbon resilient economy is one of the chapters that we will be producing and hopefully will be agreed to. We have identified already very high-level themes, but just specifically to identify the need to grow sustainably as a key theme that has informed the work we've done on this transition to a low-carbon economy. And, of course, the other one that we've had to consider was the global and regional trends and its implications for this piece of work. Our work will continue beyond 2011. We recognize that there's a lot of detailed planning that still needs to happen, and so we'd like to inform the Solar Committee that is still, that there is work beyond the 11th November deadline. And with that, Chairperson, I'd like to thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Eel. Members, as you see, there's a framework of the type of work the NPC is doing. Clearly, and quite correctly, Ms. Eesop has given us that framework and not dealt further with that, because it's the prerogative of the Commission first to express themselves before she starts doing so, and we understand that. She's also offered to give us the research that was done to show possible conflicts or sticking points where different policies may not operate well, which I think will be welcome, because that'll make our job a bit easier. And so obviously it seems to me that clearly if there are questions, I'm going to let you ask them, but more importantly that we clearly need to try and have an engagement probably after the at least the draft developmental plan has come out, to see to what extent it impacts on climate change, on environmental issues, on water issues, and then probably engage a bit better. But there is an input. Anyone want to raise any issues? Mr. Morgan?
Thank you.
Put your hands up. It's a bit difficult to see if you want to, okay?
Thanks, Chairperson. I take the Commissioner's point of view. It is a somewhat difficult time to present to the committee, and I want to say the following. I look forward to reading the draft plan on the 11th of November. I'd just like to sort of reaffirm the take of the National Planning Commission on this very complex subject of climate change. I think the just transition is an important part to focus on, and it's been a subject for quite a lot of discussion and debate in this committee certainly over the last 2 years. We've got, and I understand you haven't fully engaged with it, we've got a very comprehensive white paper on the table now. I think a lot of work has gone into it. It's a culmination of about 6 years of work since the first climate conference in Midrand in 2005. It's exceptionally thoughtful about a number of different aspects of the climate change response. I'm sure from your point of view you'll like the fact that it includes some time frames as well, which is always good in a white paper, that it actually holds itself to account by saying certain interventions will happen within 2 to 2 years or 5 years or thereafter. And I know planners like yourself would appreciate that kind of certainty. One of the largest challenges of the white paper certainly is policy coherence and making sure that the 12 or so departments that have a role in responding to climate change, whether from adaptation or mitigation or adaptation and mitigation, making sure that those policies are coordinated and actually work with each other and not against each other. And it's very easy to see what an important role the National Planning Commission has. And I understand fully you're not an implementer. You offer a vision, and I'm sure you will be an extensive commentator on various policies going forward. But the complexity of the white paper really is getting those policies to talk to each other. Your challenge as a National Planning Commission on every possible subject, not just environment, is really getting government departments and spheres of government and local government to act with some kind of common purpose. And I understand that would just be a challenge everywhere. So there's nothing quite unique, about the challenge we're dealing with. Perhaps climate change and the response is broader than some of the other policy initiatives of government. Maybe it's in that way it's interesting. But I think one of the nice things about the climate change response for the department, and I understand the concept of lock-in very much, particularly in the energy sector, things like Medupi and Kusile. But in some respect, you actually precede, in terms of existence, the National Planning Commission now, the white paper. As I said, I acknowledge the fact that this is the culmination of quite a lot of work. That's the one point. On the other side, it's actually only the beginning of a whole bunch of different stuff. So I think, in terms of the life of the National Planning Commission, the response to climate change is going to be one of the most interesting and complex challenges, but you're coming at the right time. There is, I suspect, a huge amount, a lot more lock-in across a number of other government departments where you guys must go, what do we do about this? There's a possibility to make some quite fundamental changes to our economy starting from now. So I accept I haven't asked you any questions. I've just been rather thoughtful about it. I'm a big supporter of what you do, and I think that this is possibly the most interesting challenge you will have because of its very cross-cutting nature, and I accept everything is cross-cutting. This is perhaps just that little bit more cross-cutting than many other challenges that the Planning Commission will try to get to grips with. So good luck, and I look forward to engaging with your first substantial report.
Anyone else? Mr. Kramer?
Thanks, Chair. My question is similar to the one that I asked before, actually. I mean, it's around the energy sector, which obviously is what I'm most interested in, and is probably the biggest determinant of our kind of climate change objectives. And the issue of lock-in that's there, I mean, the fact is that we do have an IRP at the moment. And, this was actually a question which I asked the National Planning Commission right up front about 2 years ago, is the relationship between the work that you do and the kind of plans that are developed by other departments and the way that those plans will lock us into certain futures and how much authority you have to kind of challenge some of those plans. And what I am sensing is that, the ink hasn't really dried on the IRP, and yet people are starting to question some of the fundamental assumptions lying beneath it as well. And so I'm just interested to what extent you've engaged with the energy futures. To what extent do you think that we can change some of the underlying assumptions or underlying scenarios being put forward by the IRP? And specifically, I mean, I ask this also in the context of the South African Renewables Initiative, which we actually discussed now at lunch as well, which to my mind really starts to push a far more progressive agenda with regards to renewable energy than is contained in the IRP, and whether one has factored that into your national planning work as well. Are you taking that more progressive agenda? Are you assuming that we can make that work? Or are you taking what the IRP is pushing out at the moment?
Chapson, thank you very much.
I almost said Mrs. Kosan.
No, it's fine.
Anyway,
no. Chapson, I should think we are getting a framework that is guiding the National Planning Commission of how to deal with issues related to their work and the climate change. And we must say, as they will be coming and delivering their plan to us, that plan, it will be a very comprehensive plan that will be speaking on the present and the future about the South Africans in relation to climate change. It can be very much good if we can get such a presentation, and also their plan will be having an influence to the National Treasury to put more resources to the Department of Environment to address climate change issues, and also even the finance of how to mobilize these resources inside and outside. I should think we'll get that Chasazong that will be getting that information, and so we're happy to get such a presentation. We'll engage as you come, because climate change is having a lot of things. That's what we're talking about, facing COP17, whereby everybody must give an input so that we achieve the goals that we want to achieve as a country. Thank you very much.
Any other questions? Comments?
Thanks, Chairperson, and I really appreciate the comments made. I am sorry. I would love to just be able to carry on and tell you all about where the, how we've looked at the content of this plan, but it is, as I said, premature, and I don't want to get into a very passionate outpouring of this until I have my fellow commissioners all behind this. But certainly, I think it's important to make it very clear that our approach as the National Planning Commission has been, we're not an implementing agency, and as you all understand, because you've had the briefing already, we will be putting out a plan. We are advisory nature. In the end, government has to agree to it. But I do hope that the Portfolio Committee and other stakeholders in the country, given that we've used the opportunity to build the dialogue, that our recommendations or the way we've approached it as such, it is so compelling that there will be support for it. So that's what we hope.
The passion is not going to pull it through, but the compelling is going to pull it through.
And so the balance between passion and compelling, we try to maintain that happy balance. But certainly we have approached this in a sharp relationship with the government department, especially the Department of Environmental Affairs. We've looked at what they produced. The white paper has been an informant to the process. You will see it reflected, is what I can say. And we certainly, we still need to have an official position around it, but it's certainly already been incorporated in that. I think what makes the work even more challenging is the kinds of the international developments that's happening globally. So a lot of the matters are, while what we say things in the white paper, for example, around our own ambition, a lot of that will also be impacted at some point in time, Chairperson, by what agreements get reached at a global level. So then we would have to look at adjusting again and being flexible to what happens. And I'm not even going to be putting any bets, placing any bets of when finally a global agreement will be reached, quite frankly. I just came out of a 3-day transitional committee meeting last night, Chairperson. I'm not sure if it has been followed this morning, in fact, early hours of the morning. And we had assumed that the Green Climate Fund, for example, would be one of the least contentious issues on this agenda, and in fact reached quite a bad deadlock in discussions yesterday. So, the United States and Saudi Arabia basically blocked the report. So it's not an easy thing, and so what we think is an ambitious timeline could be shifted quite dramatically. So I'm not even forecasting when that will happen. But certainly what we do here will be impacted on. And so our plans would have to be responsive to that, including the white paper, is a personal comment that I would make, not a commission comment that I would make.
So Osama bin Laden is not the only link between Saudi Arabia and America. They are now also sticking together on the Green Fund.
It was a fascinating alliance last night.
Well, the George Bush family just about lived in Saudi Arabia. So.
Yeah. It does become frustrating, I must admit.
American. I saw what they did with Osama. They did take him out, even when they were bed sleeping. So we better be careful. I sleep on the other side. My wife sleeps on the door side. You don't want to shoot me.
I'm sure that's not for public record.
I'm putting her in the firing line.
So the other thing that I think the committee needs to be aware of is that the way we've approached the work has been in sort of theme areas, if you can call it that. So there have been certain work streams. I've been leading the work stream on the transition to a low carbon economy, being very aware, of course, that these work streams were not working in isolation. The energy piece, Member Kreilen, was driven by Anton Eberhard, Commissioner Anton Eberhard. The water piece was driven by Commissioner Mike Muller. So these three pieces particularly needed to work quite closely together, and then, of course, links to spatial planning, et cetera, et cetera. So the energy piece is sitting elsewhere and being linked into this thing. And so, again, I can't preempt the discussions around that, but certainly it has also been informed very fundamentally by the work that's been driven in this piece of work. Climate change is an informant to that piece of work, and so I think you can look forward to something. Reasonable. One of the things I do also want to indicate is that we have commissioned another piece of work. Research work, and that is to look at, you know, we've done the alignment issues of government policies and also SOE policies, etc., but we've also now looked at commissioning a piece of work that looks specifically at potential locking. So that might be of interest to the committee as well. And essentially looking at policy and the potential lock-in implications. Not necessarily the infrastructure spend lock-in, although I'd love that to happen, and we might do that later, but certainly already the policies and what we could view as potential lock-ins, and that might be useful as well. And when that's completed, of course, we can certainly make that available to the Commission. And that will inform the next phase of our work going forward. I view what was said as comments and so not necessarily specific questions.
Thank you. No, thank you very much. I actually am, in a way, I thought when we started that maybe we wasted your time by letting you fly all the way to Cape Town. I know it's not something you like doing, and I know you wouldn't want to stay in your own bed this night, tonight, and so on. But actually, I'm very glad that we have, because although you've given us a framework where you're going still, the one good thing about it is at least it's going to make me sleep better tonight. Because I'm very much supportive. I really think the white paper is a great white paper. I think it's, you know, from what it was and what where we are now, I really think it's got the huge potential to really change this DNA of our economy, which is deeply ingrained. And you're going to have to take hammers and cannons and things to try and move it slightly off its course. It always reminds me of these big tankers, these oil tankers. Now, when you want the oil tanker to change its course, you have to give the order a week earlier. You have to, into its bellows, say, 1 degree left, and then 7 days later, if you look at the horizon, you'll see you've moved 1 degree left. And, you know, that's literally how we're going to have to tear the economy away from its moorings and move it. I mean, it's not going to happen easy. And the one thing that worried me about the paper is exactly these issues, that we're not looking at the hard economic issues. Because I can see there's going to be huge pain. And the pain's only going to start coming when we start doing things. I mean, because there's no option for us. We have to do it. And it's so really nice to see that, you know, you're focusing on these kind of things, exactly those economic issues. That when we mitigate like this and like that, that these are the consequences of it, so that we have something to at least not only weigh it against, but at least then to know that those are the consequences, how we do it. And then I think the issue that Gareth always raises, then the sequencing of how you do stuff. So I'm actually quite happy that we've done this. I think what it leaves us with is we're going to have to probably in the new year engage with the Planning Commission around these, the developmental plan and so on, particularly as it affects our mandate. And then as we said, if you can let us have the research before that, at least we can make it part of our public hearings, which will start probably not next week, but the week after it, depending on how many submissions we get. So you know, maybe it wasn't such a bad idea to bring you down. It gives us, I think it helps the committee see much better what's happening in government and where things are happening, and to let us understand those issues. So thank you very much, much appreciated. Any last questions? Everyone happy? Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. No, we can talk. We can talk about COP 17. We can talk about it. We've decided collectively as a committee how much money we wanted to put on any results from COP 17. And I couldn't get any single person in this committee to give me more than 5 cents, which I thought was high.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
So I think, you know, the realities are, is as we've said before, firstly, I think as a committee, all of us, I think across the board, we think that we need to scale down the kind of things that we think we can achieve, number one. Number two, you know, really to start changing the debate. If we're going to have the debate as we've had for the last 10 years on exactly the same issues, on the basis of the Bali roadmap, then we're not going to get anywhere. Because we're locked into such opposite positions that people are just not going to move from it. And if we don't force the debate into an area where integrity and those things start coming into question, that we, you know, if we want people to create a new world order as far as climate change is concerned, then everyone must do it. We can't have some people saying, but because of the past, quite justifiably, by the way, because of the past, you know, these are the people that must. We have to try and change that, how we look at common and differentiated. I mean, clearly it has to be common and differentiated. We have to not, you know, not give up on that concept. But the way that we've looked at it now, we've locked ourselves into a conundrum. And so you're not going to move forward. So if you don't start looking at different ways of creating common and differentiated, and therefore tie everyone into the process, then you'll have really be able to say that these people are spoilers. But until we do that, they have now, we've locked ourselves with the Bali roadmap into a process where they legitimately can say, well, do that, then we'll do that. And if we don't break that debate. So, you know, I'm hoping at least if Durban does anything, he just changes and says, we're going to put this debate behind us and we're now going to start this new one. And obviously the debate has to be on creating one common legal binding standard for the world, whatever that may be. And, you know, hopefully if we can get the debate going in that direction, I think all of us as a committee, I mean, we don't have positions. Clearly we're not the negotiators and no one can quote us. But, I mean, from our discussions that we've had in the committee, I mean, I think we commonly feel that that has to be the way. If we want to just keep on going on, then what it's going to mean is we as a committee are once a year going to have a nice jaw for 10 days or 14 days in some exotic resort like Cancun. I'm not exactly going to call Durban an exotic resort. But hopefully the next one will be in the Seychelles or Qatar. Maybe, you know, the salt mines of Siberia or somewhere. But I think, you know, that's COP for us. I mean, as a committee, we're going to be there. We're going to play our role. We're going to make a noise. We're going to jive. We're going to enjoy it. But expectations are low.
If you added jolling in
that. By that stage, we'll be so tired of nothing that we'll love to come and join the NGO party. So, you know, that's where we are. We hope, of course, that your other hat that you wear, that you've already made a submission on the white paper, else we'll be very angry. Oh, that's too slow. Okay, thank you very much. Can committee members just stay? We still have to finish those two reports, please. I need all your votes to pass. Get copies, please.
I've got one copy that we have not yet received.
Yeah.